Lee Bonsfield will be held the weekend of January 25th, 26th, and 27th. There will be four events with an entry fee of $40 per ring. The first draws will start on Friday, January 25th at 6 o'clock, and curling will be round the clock. There will be a banquet and dance to be held on Saturday night. Entries will be limited to 64 rinks, and the entries close on Monday. So to register, you'll have to call 668-2473 or 668-2554. Now 6 minutes past 11 o'clock. And with Talkback for this morning and his guests, here's Sandy Brown.
Thank you very much, Rod, and good morning on a Friday. It's warmed up. It's nice to be alive in Whitehorse today. I think that's probably the best way to put it. Our guest today for the first half hour, Executive Committee Member Hilda Watson, and then from 11:30 until 12 o'clock, Executive Committee Member Clive Tanner. A lot of discussion, Hilda, about Kewaunee National Park in the last little while. Dates back to the Standing Committee's arrival in Whitehorse, and certainly much farther than that, but a lot of discussion of late, and your stand on Kewaunee Park is something that I would like to hear, and I'm sure that the people listening today would like to hear. Maybe we could start off just on what your stand is on Kewaunee Park.
Well, thank you, Sandy, for having me here today, giving me the opportunity to express my views on the national park, the proposed national park for the Yukon, and I have said this publicly, and I will say it again today, that I am very much in favor of the formation, legal establishment of Kewaunee National Park for the Yukon Territory. We, 30 years now, we've been waiting for a national park, and on February the 14th of 72, when the minister declared the boundaries of the national park, I was very happy. And when our council, our territorial council, by motion accepted Mr. Kretchen's proposition for Kewaunee National Park, the vote was 6-1. Six councillors were in favor, but this, of course, made me very happy again, too. So it looked very much as though we were at last going to achieve what we have been sort of waiting for 30 years. Now, when the National Park, the amendments to the National Park Bill have been put forward to the House of Commons, and we have had objections, and it appears now that again our national park for the Yukon Territory is in jeopardy.
In what way? Now, this is the part that I think maybe a lot of people have misunderstood, just exactly why it appears as though it's in jeopardy, and the things that have happened. I was away, and you were away, during the month, the latter part of December and the early part of January. I'm not aware of what took place. I understand that there has been, as far as the federal government is concerned, some delay in the situation. There's been some discussion by the Yukon's MP, Eric Nielsen, who got involved in it. There was a telegram sent to the minister, or I believe, if I'm mistaken, please correct me, by yourself and by Ron Watson, who's the chairman of the LID.
That's right.
In Haines Junction. And I'm not aware of it's a jumble to me at the present time, and maybe, if possible, if you could start in somewhere in there and explain to me just what the delay is and the things that have happened up until today, January the 18th.
Well, maybe I'd have to go back then to midsummer, this past summer, and you're aware of this, when the Chamber of Commerce, when Mr. Smith from McElhenney consulting firm, engineering firm, brought forth this proposal for the LSAC hydroelectric development. And at that time, the Chamber of Commerce went on record of not specifically opposing the establishment of the park, but asking for a further delay again, till Mr. Smith's study could be made of this proposal of Mr. Smith's. At that time, the Chamber of Commerce and the Chamber of Mines made an appearance before the Senate Committee when Bill S-4, the amendments to the National Park.
Right.
At that time, I could sort of foresee, or this was my presumption, that here we have the opposition arising to the park. And, of course, the Standing Committee came to Whitehorse. Mr. Smith again appeared before the Standing Committee, and the Chamber of Commerce is still on record in supporting Mr. Smith's proposal. And my big objection, of course, to Mr. Smith's proposal is that there has been no work done on it at all. It's just, I think it's just sort of a delay tactic not to let this area be put into a national park. This is my interpretation of it. I could be wrong.
What's the value of the delay, if there is to be a delay? Why would someone institute delay to study the outset?
Well, this is exactly why do we have to have another delay? We've delayed it for 30 years. Certainly they've had all the opportunity to do the exploration and the study that they need of that area. And when the public thinking the year before, Mr. Chrétien was being pressured for a national park, and there was a great deal of public thinking in the Yukon Territory at that time for a national park, and the mining companies were doing a great deal of exploration in that area, and this is fine. So here we're looking at another delay. So then, of course, when Bill S-4 was discussed in the Standing Committee for Northern Affairs, then this amendment was put forward to change the proposed amendment to the National Park Act to make it necessary for, before a national park could be established in the Yukon Territory, that approval be sought and gained from the Territorial Council. Now, I'm not opposed to this, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But the amendment really is a constitutional amendment.
Absolutely.
At the present time, before a national park can be formed in the provinces, it's necessary for the provincial authorities, the provincial government of that province, to okay the national park, for a better word. Now, but the provincial governments own the land, the crown land, in their provinces, or most of it. In the Yukon Territory, it's federal crown land. The Yukon does not have control of its natural resources and the control of the land in the Yukon Territory. And this amendment virtually says that the Territorial Council would have the power of vetoing the federal government, the senior government. And this, of course, is really quite unthinkable, I think, in the minds of a lot of the members of Parliament.
Well, this is what Mr. Nielsen attempted to have happen on the Friday before, or the Thursday before Parliament recessed.
That's right. And I just cannot see how Mr. Chrétien can go along with this amendment, how any government could go along with this amendment. And why, and as a territorial councillor, you may be questioning why I don't think that it's really necessary to get approval from the Territorial Council for a national park. I'm all for constitutional reform. I would like to see this, but this is not one of my priorities, because I think we've got a history of this national park in the Yukon. I said 30 years the area has been sort of looked upon as a proposed national park for the Yukon. In 1960, the federal government came forward to our Territorial Council of the day with a proposal that if they didn't want this area to be a national park right away, that they would set it aside as a wilderness area, but permit mining and exploration to continue for the next 25 years. And at that time, then they would sit down and, on the basis of the mining and the exploration that had gone on, and the results of the exploration of the previous 25 years, then they would determine the boundaries. The Territorial Council of that day, the elected representatives of the people of the Yukon, turned that proposal down, which is fine. So the federal government had come to them on that occasion and they had turned it down, so the federal government didn't proceed. In 1966, they came forward to the Council of the day with a proposal to establish the core concept. They would establish one area as a national park, and the area surrounding it would be a buffer zone, and they would be able to do their exploration for another 10 years and mining, and at that time, then they would determine the boundaries. So it isn't that they have, in the past, ignored the Territorial Council. At that time, the Territorial Council turned the proposition down, and that's fine. They, on behalf of the people of the territory, a majority of them didn't feel that it was desirable to have a national park. So there was consultation with the council on Kluane National Park. The council approved it, 6-1. Now, why are we setting blocks? Why not just proceed with the national park? And why bother with the amendment? Because I cannot foresee for quite some time in the future even a proposal for another national park. The thing that concerns me more, and this is the area that I'm concerned, is this proposed hydro development. Now, if the national park was not declared, and if they went ahead with this proposal and did some work on it, and decided in their wisdom that this would be a good thing, this type of development would be a good thing for the Yukon Territory, there is nothing in any of the federal acts which would make it necessary for the Minister of the Government of Canada to even consult with the elected representatives of the people of the Yukon. In other words, they could proceed. They would have to have hearings under the Water Board. They would have to apply for land use. These committees would make their recommendations to the minister, and he could say, go ahead and flood that southern part of the Yukon, put in a hydro development. I don't know what the returns to the Yukon would be, but we need this, and therefore we are going to do it, and the people of the Yukon or the representatives would not have any say. This is the area where I'm more concerned than with the national park. The national park, you're not destroying an area. You're only putting it, you're preserving it. And if there's ever a national need or a need within the Yukon Territory, by legislation, those boundaries can be changed or can be removed completely. So we are not really losing anything.
It's not for time immemorial.
Absolutely not.
Okay, we're going to take a call. We do remind you that if anybody does have any questions, the number is 77891. Good morning, talk back. Go ahead, please.
Can I speak to Mrs. Watson?
Yes, so would you speak up and go ahead?
Yeah. Hello.
Yes.
I would like to put forward an opinion on the park, which would differ with yours. I believe that it would be absolutely ridiculous to tie up a large hydroelectric potential for all time in a park, because I think our power is going to be more necessary than a large park or even the power potential of the LSAC, and it's bound to be large. Nobody has made a proper study of it, but it's got to be large. It could be developed within a park, for that matter. I think that if you check with most of the people, you'll find out that a good number of people, probably 60% of them, I would imagine, would not be in favor of tying up a large hydro potential for all time.
Well, thank you. That was your opinion, as you expressed.
That's a personal opinion.
That's right.
I'm a private citizen, but this is my opinion, and I believe that 60% or more of the people of the Yukon would agree with this opinion.
Well,
I'm not objecting to a park by any manner of means. I believe we should have a park, but at the same time, I don't think we should tie up a large hydroelectric potential. This is going to be more important to the Yukon than so large a park, and actually developing it within the park wouldn't damage the park.
Well, you're making a good point there, but I'd like to differ with you in a couple of areas. You're saying you're tying it up for time immemorial, and you're not. And at the present time, the Yukon does not require the type of power that this development would produce.
But we will.
Not at this time. And you're looking forward to 30, 40, 50 years. And
no,
this is
I'm
the point that I am
to
making.
Possibly in the next 10 years.
Oh, I would differ with you there. But this is the point that I am making, that if in the future, and there is an absolute need for this type of a power development in the Yukon Territory, and all other sources for power development in the Yukon Territory have been explored.
Remember, though, that the LSAC is probably the biggest potential. It's all Canadian water. It's a short ways to the ocean. It's the right one to develop the cheapest for the most power.
What benefits do you see accruing to the Yukon from such a hydro development?
Industrial development.
If you have studied the proposal that Mr. Smith put forward, all of the dams, all of the power stations would be, all but one would be in Alaska.
No, so they wouldn't.
If you have studied your map and your proposal,
I have studied the map. No, there might be one dam in Alaska, but the rest of them would be in the Yukon. The power would be mostly generated in the Yukon.
Well,
or
I
BC.
I don't think that the Yukon, the benefit from a hydro development that would be accruing to the Yukon Territory as a result of this
would be
very limited.
I believe there would be a tremendous advantage to having that power available. It's the cheapest power and the biggest potential outside of diverting the Yukon River back through the mountains the way they talked about at one time. But this could be done. On the LSAC, it's one where it would be a big potential, and it could be done at a reasonable cost.
The size of the LSAC proposal would seem to me to indicate that British Columbia would have to be interested in a transmission line to carry that power to south and western Canada and maybe even the northwestern part of the United States.
Well, they might, but then has anybody ever thought that there's a possibility of developing industry here? This is a possibility, a big possibility.
But
where there's power, industry comes.
I think that you must also remember before a development like this could proceed, you would have to have agreements, international agreements. You would have to have agreements with the province of British Columbia. So you're not looking at a simple cut-and-dried thing. And you must also remember that there hasn't been any research or any of the facts, the geological facts or any of the engineering facts of this hydro development, the Alsak hydro development, been done.
That's right.
There has been nothing done on it. It's just almost a gleam in someone's eye.
Mm-hmm,
and you know that since 1946, there have been 7 major proposals put forward on studies for hydro development in the Yukon Territory, and some of them are almost as large as the one that Mr. Smith has proposed.
And the Alsak
and there
has
have been hundreds of thousands of dollars
back.
Spent on these studies.
The Alsak has been in that game reserve and proposed as a park. That's why there hasn't been studies done on it.
There have been... you could have done studies on it because there's been mining exploration in that area.
Yes,
there's
but
been mining. It's just been a game preserve. It hasn't been a national park. There hasn't
been anything stopping them to do the study. It has been reserved with the idea that it would be a national park, though. And
just as a game preserve, there has been no limitation on any mining or any study done for hydro development. And
right.
As I was saying, there were 7 major proposals, and there have been hundreds and thousands of dollars put into the studies for these proposals for hydro development in the Yukon Territory. And they've been done a lot more thoroughly. The one on the Alsak, and nothing has come of them. Now,
on the Alsak has never been done.
This is a gleam in someone's eye, and again, we are supposed to defer the national park.
I don't say defer the national park, but I say defer that portion of it until we know what power is available there.
But when you're saying the portion that would be flooded would be the prime park area.
Not
the Kewaunee area really is in 3 parts. There's
what?
The glacier area, the mountain parts, and then about a 30-mile width. Along the Alaska Highway. And of course,
a lake in the Alsak Valley would enhance the park rather than detract from it. It would give a place where people could get in to the park. It was a lake 100 years ago. Why shouldn't it be a lake again? If that glacier keeps going, it may be a lake.
Well, thank you for expressing your opinion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Talkback. Go ahead, please.
Could I go ahead. This Talkback?
Yes, you're on the air.
Why not look for a place that hasn't the power potential that the Kewaunee Park has for a park? I mean, why not put this park somewhere else?
Where would you suggest, sir?
Ogilvy Mountains in northern Alaska, northern Yukon.
By the same token, I could say to you, why don't you look for a hydro development for the Yukon's industries, and I think this is needed, I agree with this very much. Why not look for a hydro development in the vicinity, or within the mineralized area, in the central part of the Yukon, where we have a very highly mineralized area, where we already have industries that requires this type of electrical power? It isn't that we're limited to just one area in Yukon where hydro development is available. And this is my big point. Why just pick on this one area when there are other areas that do have potential and that are closer to the industries that really require a great quantity of cheap power within the Yukon Territory? I don't think we should be too worried about BC at the present time.
May I answer that?
Yes, go ahead.
The same reason that you want the park right close to civilization. Now, this hydro development is as close as possible to the settled part of the Yukon and probably the settled part of the rest of the country. It costs less to transmit this power from, say, the Alsak than it would from Ogilvy Mountain area.
I still maintain...
The cost, but why... they develop a hydroelectric power plant in Banff, Alberta quite a number of years ago. Why tie up power? Why tie up in development in a park when a park you can put a park any place, but industrial development has to depend on availability. Transportation.
Very kind of you to say that you can put a park any place. I disagree with you. I think that in the Yukon Territory, we can have a park, we can have mining, and we can have hydro development. And we can have Tuwani Park without limiting the hydro development and without limiting the mining potential of the Yukon Territory. And I think that the economic benefits from these three complementing each other would be greater to the Yukon than just tying up another area, leaving this area again, and not actually doing anything with it because there may be a need for it.
One remark, please.
Yes, go ahead.
That is one person's opinion. And you are not any smarter or wiser than anyone else. Now, this is your pet, and I, for one, do not agree with
you. Well, thank you
very
for
much.
Your opinion.
Pardon? Thank you very much for your
thank you.
Good morning, Talkback. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Willie Jewell, County Brotherhood.
Yes, Willie.
I'd like to place a question to Mrs. Watson regarding education.
Okay.
Now, I'm wondering why there is very little emphasis put on Indian education and Indian curriculum throughout the Yukon schools, as in comparison to the Alaska education system and to the Northwest Territory system. I'll just hang up and listen to their answer.
Thank you, Willie.
Thank you, Willie. You're comparing us to Alaska and the Northwest Territory. Okay. In Alaska, now, the Yukon Territory, the Yukon Territorial government took over the education of the Indian children in the Yukon. They became part of the school system in the Yukon approximately 10 years ago. I think we've made great strides in that 10 years. Now, you forget that in Alaska, they have been working on this for a lot longer than we have. And 10 years is a very minimal time to have to work on this type of changes, because you can't make changes like this overnight and have good changes. Now, Alaska has been working on this for years. In the Northwest Territories, there again, we have a different situation. In the Northwest Territories, you have communities, complete communities, where the only people attending the schools are Indian people, or they are in a great majority. And in many of those communities, Willie, a lot of people that do not speak the English language, a lot of the children who, when they start school, cannot speak the English language. Now, in the Yukon Territory, as far as Alaska is concerned, we haven't had any near the time they have. And in the Yukon Territory, there isn't the great need. Our school situation is completely different than the Northwest Territories. And you know that we are doing work in this area. You know that we have someone on our staff who is supposed to be producing material in this regard. And I do not think that we should jump into changing curriculum just so that we can say we changed it, because I don't think the Indian people would benefit from it, nor with the Yukon Territory. And I think that just because this is a popular thing to talk about at the present time, it's a popular thing to push, you jump into something and do something incorrectly. I think we're working on it. I agree with you. It's slowly but thoroughly, and I think we should be able to come up with an educational system which meets the needs of all of the Yukon Territory and which all of the Yukon Territory will approve of. And I think that this should be our goal, Willie, and I think that if you sit down and think about it, this is the goal of the Indian people. But you can't do it overnight.
Good morning, Talkback. Go ahead, please.
Oh, Mrs. Watson?
Yes.
I want to say that I agree with you totally about the park situation. I'm glad to see somebody isn't going to make the same mistakes that they made outside.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. We are running out of time. I should have made it an hour, but hopefully you'll be able to come back in the near future again, and we'll be talking at that time. I meant to ask you, and I will ask you now, how the education ordinance, what's happening? Is it going to be brought forth at the spring session, and where do you stand at the present time?
Sandy, it'll be brought forward at the spring session. We are working hard. And thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, and I really would like to come back to discuss the National Park. I would like to get an idea of what some of the opinions of the people of the Yukon Territory are on this.
What I'd like to do maybe is, I haven't spoken to Mr. Nielsen, but maybe I'll ask you. I understand he is coming to town in the near future. I would like to maybe get yourself, Mr. Nielsen, and maybe somebody from the mining sector and somebody from the environmental sector before the end of the month to discuss it, because from what I understand, it will be coming up when Parliament does reconvene, and we could get the people to phone up and ask questions in that manner, and I'd like to do that, and when he does come, I think we'll try and set that up if you're agreeable to it.
That's fine. That's fine. I'd like to see this. I'd like to have more public forum on this. I think it's a very, very important issue to the people.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sandy.
We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be back at 77891 after these commercial messages with Executive Committee Member Clive Tanner.
Because you can't fool
the woman. The Woolworth Home Entertainment Center has some outstanding stereo bargains for you. For recording your own 8-track tapes, the Lloyd's Recorder. It has two microphones, and it's priced at just $129.87. For concert hall realism, the Sanyo 4-channel receiver with matrix decoder, turntable, two speakers, and stand, and package priced at just $489.95. For total sound at a budget price, listen to the Strauss Component Stereo, BSR Mini Turntable, 8-track amplifier, two speakers, a stand and headphones, all of that for just
$159.95. Because you can't fool a woman.
For total listening pleasure, sample the fine sounds at Woolworth Stereo Department. A stereo to suit everyone's budget at Woolworth in the Quanlin Mall.
Shop where there is a pleasant atmosphere, competitive prices, and lots of free parking. Tourist Services Supermarket. This weekend, Vilco powdered milk is $2.29 for a 5-pound bag. Rosedale creamed or kernel corn is 4 14-ounce tins for 95 cents. And Sunripe Blue Label apple juice is 65 cents for a 48 fluid ounce tin. Outstanding weekend values at Tourist Services Supermarket are yours. Tonight on WHTV Channel 2, three movies for your entertainment. At 9, watch The Triple Cross, starring Christopher Plummer, Yul Brynner, and Romy Schneider. At 11:30, it's Rio Conchos, complete with stolen rifles, cavalry, Indians, and Mexican bandits. Starring Richard Boone, Stuart Whitman, and Tony Franciosa. And at 1:45 in the wee hours, watch The Virginian, starring Joel McRae and Brian Donlevy. WHTV, it's the late night place to be.
Program is Talk Back, number 77891. Our guest this half hour is Clive Tanner, Executive Committee Member, Territorial Counselor for Porter Creek, North Whitehorse. Whitehorse, North.
Whitehorse, North. Whitehorse, North. More than Porter Creek.
All right. You have now been in office 3 months and 3 days, if I'm not mistaken. October 15th to January the 18th is 3 months and 3 days. We talked with you at that time and said that in a couple of months we'll have you back. A lot of things have taken place since I'm sure you're taking over the office, and certainly a lot of things that you had to put together, and assumedly some of those things are put together, and probably some of them are still sort of a little bit mind-boggling. Moves being made for the takeover of health services in the Yukon, and that's all of the health services. Do you think we should do it, or do we have a good thing going with Northern Health Services, and maybe we shouldn't even bother rocking the boat?
Oh, I think we should do it. As to the timing, there's obviously got to be some fairly big decisions made and some investigation done as to what it's going to cost. Mm-hmm. But there's just no doubt that the duplication of within the health services branch has got to stop. And the obvious thing is that the decision should be made locally. And the only way to do that is to take over the health services. So the long range, yes, we should take it over.
That include hospitals?
Yep.
All of the hospitals in the territory. Would that mean expansion of Whitehorse General Hospital?
No, not necessarily. It would mean that the jurisdiction would be ours rather than Ottawa's. Mm-hmm. And local decisions that have to be made for local circumstances can be made by local people. That's basically what it is. That's basically the whole thing on autonomy, too.
Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think everybody will admit that since we've taken over the Alaska Highway, that there's been an improvement in service, there's been an improvement in roads, there's been a saving in costs. As to the financial arrangements, they've got to be negotiated between ourselves and the government that has it presently. But as to service to the public in the future, it's got to improve when we take it over.
What are some of the problems that exist now, other than, more specifically, other than just day-to-day?
Sandy, I'll give you one of the best examples. If you go to Dawson, you'll find a federally run small hospital. You'll find a federally run, a territorially run nursing home, and a territorially run old people's home. To the people living in Dawson, they don't want to make a distinction between whether one's a federal jurisdiction or one's a territorial jurisdiction. All they see is two buildings catering to the needs of the people of Dawson. And when something goes wrong in one building, you can't do anything about it because it's... in simple terms, there's probably more staff than would need be if they were amalgamated, or if the total authority at the top was in Whitehorse or in Dawson. They could make a decision, and then the two things come together all the time.
Are you saying that then, with changeover, when it does come, and hopefully it is coming, that you would decentralize to the point that Dawson would be able to do their own thing, and Watson Lake, and...
We decentralize under the one department.
Mm-hmm.
The executive decisions will be made by the executive committee, the department.
Is that a Freudian slip there?
What was I going to say?
The elected.
I don't think it's any secret of the fact that next time around there's going to be more. There's a suggestion there should be more members of council, and obviously if there's more members of council, there'll be more members of the executive committee that are elected.
Medicare continues to show a profit, at least. This is what we've been hearing for the past while. Have there been discussions on either, you had mentioned, I think, if I'm not mistaken, either reducing the premiums or increasing the services provided under Medicare?
That final decision hasn't been made, Sandy. It'll be made before the next territorial council. It'll be presented to council as a proposal, and council will make the decision on what they want to do. When we substantiate it, and we're very near that point, when we substantiated the fact that the surpluses are there. It could very well be that we'll have a surplus, but we should keep something in reserve. This is merely one suggestion. We should have something in reserve in case we have a health disaster, if you like. If we had an epidemic of something or other, obviously the claims on the health plan are going to be very great, and we should have some money in reserve for that. But there'll be two or three suggestions which we'll be looking at, and we'll make a decision, and then it's up to council to go along with them, endorse them or not endorse them.
We've more doctors in the territory than I think we've ever had. The agreement for fees for the doctors, I believe, comes up at the end of March. Any new negotiations taking place or anything started from your end?
Yeah, we've had an initial meeting with the doctors, and we're in the process of having a second meeting. Well, I say we're in the process. We're in the process of getting material together for the second meeting. And both the doctors who have been quite cooperative and who I think serve this community very well and ourselves are anxious to get a decision. And that decision, again, will be made before council sits, I hope. And that'll be another thing that'll determine what surplus or funds that we have and how we spend. As far as the number of doctors as compared to patients are concerned, this is the most well-served area in the country. The doctor-patient ratio, the number of patients is to doctors, this is the highest in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to say again that I think for a community of this size, we're very well served by the medical profession.
Do you envisage any problems with negotiations?
There's always going to be a difference of view, but I think we can resolve them.
What about the medical evacuation plan? How is it working? Are you satisfied with it? Is it possibly going to be expanded, or what's the situation there?
No, I'm not satisfied with it because council, in their wisdom, last spring voted that we should evacuate people if there's a medical necessity, but they didn't vote us the funds to do it with, or the funds weren't voted. And council's got to, if they want to make that policy decision, which they have the right to do, they've got to also find the funds and the taxation that is necessary to fund it. And I don't think it's any secret that the funds so far that have been expended have gone way out of sight. So we'll have to go to council, and we will do at the next session with two or three suggestions. And again, council will make their minds up as to which way they want to go.
How's it being paid for now, then? General revenue?
It's being paid out of... we've got two votes in there. There's a vote for emergency, and there's a vote for travel within the territory to Whitehorse for those people who have to come in to see a doctor. Those are the vehicles we're using, but we're going to very likely have to come to council and say, look, we voted $37,000 under these two votes. In round figures, we might have spent $100,000. Now you're going to have to vote a supplementary to pay for the difference, and at the same time give us direction as to where you want us to go next year.
Is the program in getting bigger? Are more people taking advantage of it?
Yeah.
By any ballpark ratio or figure that would...
Three times higher than it was.
Any reason for that? Is it because it's there? More people would say than before that, you know, that they would...
More people taking advantage of the program. The fact that the people who do take advantage of the program don't have to pay anything towards it. So consequently, we don't have the return of that money. It used to cost $100 to go out to the evacuated. I think there are... like any program, there are a few people who are going to abuse it, and I think there's been a few abuses. It puts our medical people in the decision of saying you can go and you can't go, which is very, very difficult. And I think our medical people, when I talk about, I mean our zone health director, should have legislative authority to say, well, this is what the council has said, and this is the way you can go or can't go. And I think that's it's a fairer way to our staff, and it's a fairer way to the public, because they know where they stand.
You mentioned when you went into office that there were problems with billing of Medicare. There were a few things that you were immediately going to take a look at.
I've had a look at them, Sandy. As far as the billings are concerned, I've done some private checking. I've had some people talk to the public at large. And like everything else, looking at it from the outside, looking in, you can see all sorts of problems. And when you get down to the details of the problem, quite often there's an explanation which doesn't appear to you, to me, for example, as a councillor sitting in council. I think the basic program had a hard time getting off the floor to start with. I think most of a lot of the problems have been ironed out, but that's the decision that I've come up with, and a lot of the problems have been ironed out. But I think we still have a need to make sure that, one, the public understand it, and that, two, that... nobody is getting involved in more red tape than is absolutely necessary. And I think we might be able to improve that area.
Something that you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
That's one half of the portfolio. The other half is welfare. Are you satisfied with what's going on? If not, what changes do you see possibly leading toward or making?
I think perhaps our... they're having the same problem in BC. There was a report given by... I think the man's name was Fuchs. Folks, yesterday to the Barrett government. I think that perhaps we need to look at the total welfare position, and this is where the federal territorial thing comes in. I think welfare perhaps is part and parcel of health in some respects, and part and parcel of corrections in some respects, and that's the reason the three portfolios were put together under one executive committee member. In BC, they've come up with a suggestion, and which is already in operation in Saskatchewan to some extent, of having resource centres where the public go to for a health need, a welfare need, a probationary need. And I think maybe this is something that we should be very seriously looking at and seeing whether we're not fragmentizing the service that we're giving to those people in need, because quite often they overlap. In fact... I think Mrs. Watson would probably agree in some respects education comes into it. Mm-hmm.
if a child is, if a child's parents are on welfare and if the child is not being properly looked after, it obviously his schooling suffers. And eventually when his schooling starts to, or his attendance falls down, public in the long run have to pay for the problems that that are created as an adult too. I think we should be looking at a total policy. They've already done it in some respects in the States too.
There was 264 recommendations in the Dr. Folks report to the Barrett government. There's been much criticism, including some criticism at this point, although nothing really concrete in the form of change of the recommendations by the BC Medical Association. They want to take a look at it before they make any recommendations. Are you going to be able to get yourself a copy of the 9 volumes included in the report to be able to take a look at it to see if there's anything that you would...
Sandy, I've got to give you 100% marks for doing research that I haven't done. All I heard is on the report was on the radio last night on that on the other station. And my immediate reaction is I want to look at that report and I want to see it as fast as I can. And
9 volumes.
Well, if I don't look at it, then I'll have somebody in my department look at it and then have recommendations. The idea is not new. Dr. Folks was looking at the past and making recommendations for the future. I think that's really what we've got to do in our government.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, since it's already been done for another government in with their particular needs in view, I think that we should look at it as well. Now, whether or not I'm going to sit and read 9 volumes between now and next session of council, I don't know. I wouldn't think so. But I can tell you one thing. One has to do an awful lot of reading in this
mm-hmm.
in this job. Since I've been there, it's very seldom that I know Mrs. Watson and myself don't take work home. Just about every night. And it seems to me we're usually the last to leave the offices, too. But this was true when Mr. Chambers said that there's an awful lot of work to be done. There's a lot of decisions to be made, and to make the decision as logically as you can, you've got to get as much backup as you can.
Are you surprised at the workload that's involved?
No, because I knew that Councillor Chambers and Mrs. Watson were working extremely hard before I got in there. It was anybody who walked up on the third floor of the federal building could see it. I'm surprised, I'll tell you one thing I'm surprised about, the number of decisions that go to XCOM. I've already made the comment in XCOM, in the executive committee, that I think there's too many decisions being made there that should be made at the department level. But the variety of decisions, that surprises me. They cross all departments, they cross all areas of government. It's an exercise, it's an initial exercise in democracy in the Yukon, I think, and extremely interesting.
Democracy in the Yukon brings me to my next question. You've stated on numerous occasions prior to getting elected to the executive committee and after you were in office that the changes were in the wind and that was going to happen. I don't know whether that was a little bit of a slip that you made a little bit earlier or maybe I was just looking for a slip. What's happening?
We might have some further idea of what's happening as far as the Northwest Territory is concerned by this afternoon or early this evening, because I think the Minister of Indian Affairs is going to make a statement in Yellowknife. As far as what's happening here is there are going to be recommendations in the throne speech in February of changes in legislation to the Yukon Act, which will expand council. I think that's pretty well known. It'll obviously, if you expand council, expand executive committee, insofar as elected people are concerned. Now, further than that, Sandy, I'm not at liberty to say because, first of all, I'm not absolutely sure, but it's not too hard to guess some of these things. But the suggestion will be made that the Yukon Act won't be amended. Then it will be put before Parliament, and Parliament will decide whether or not they want to amend the Yukon Act. I do think that the federal government has probably, in their own minds, decided how far they're prepared to let us go to start with. And I'm slightly concerned that you're going to get a position that you've got with the Killarney Park, that amendments are going to be made which are not acceptable to the government for one reason or another, and that the legislation might go down the drain, and that would be a disaster. It's absolutely essential that council be expanded. It's absolutely essential that elected people take over the administrative offices of government.
You said February. I've been away for a while. Is that changed from March? February 23rd?
I'm talking about the
throne speech.
Throne speech from Ottawa. Well, they're going in, I think it's February 23rd. And you know the system. The government presents what it intends to do. And one of the things it intends to do is to amend the Yukon Act.
Definitely that's on the agenda.
Yes. Yeah, well, the minister said that.
Right. Oh, I wasn't aware that had been...
I guess you don't get all the news when you're out in B.C.
No, you get very depressing news, I think. I was just talking with Mrs. Watson, who was on a holiday as well, and I don't know. It was kind of nice not to know what was going on up here, but by the same token, I think the news is much more refreshing up here than it is down there.
I think it's more immediate, isn't it?
I don't know what it is.
But when you hear news here, you usually know or know somebody who knows.
The Telegraph has already gotten it in, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying the job?
Yeah, I am enjoying the job. I'm enjoying the job insofar as the experience. It's a very interesting experience. I'm enjoying the job insofar that I think everybody would enjoy this type of job, is that they take part in the decision-making process, and that's an interesting job. It's interesting insofar that you've got to make a decision in the best interests of all the various people who want you to make a decision. One of the problems you get is that the government takes in the money. It's got 80% of the programs are already set. It's got to spend it on education. It's got to spend it on roads. But there is a little discretion there. But where the discretionary areas come in, where you have some slight choice, there's 10 people asking you to do 10 different things with it.
Mm.
And you've got to, in your wisdom, or the five of us in our wisdom, have got to make the decision of which one we're going to choose. And you never win, of course. No matter which decision you make, somebody's always going to criticize you for it. One hopes you make the best decision with two things in mind. What you consider is best and what you think your constituents voted you in there for. And that, I've heard Eric Nielsen, I've heard, who was it just recently? Oh, the NDP convention in Vancouver was saying they were demanding of the new NDP government they do as they're told from the caucus floor. And I don't think the public understand it. That once you get in there, you've got the executive capacity to make a decision, and then there's just no way that you go back to the caucus, the overall policy you bring in.
Mm-hmm.
But the day-to-day decisions you've got to make yourself. This is incidentally, this illustrates the absolute need in my mind to run on party lines next time. Because what you've got now is two elected people and three appointed making decisions with, I don't think, any overriding policy. I think the next time, or the next territorial election, there should be 10, 12, 14, whatever number of people you have running, and they should be saying, this is what we believe in as a group.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe what we believe in, vote for us, and this is the policy that we'll follow.
Do you think that's part and parcel of the reasons for a good portion of sort of an ad hoc development from the last few years because of the lack of party?
Yeah, so I think some of the problems that we've had in the past, Councillor, is just the lack of that. That's one. And two, I think all members, all seven of us, have made the mistake of letting personality get in front of policy, maybe because of the lack of policy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the public should know that they're going to vote, for example, for... without getting specifically into party politics, I think they should know that if you vote for this group of people, three of those people or four of those people will be on the executive. They'll be the virtual government.
But party politics would be an exercise in futility under the present system, would it not?
Under seven?
Yeah. And with the appointed...
Not really,
as far as the executive.
No, because one thing that I was convinced of before and has been totally confirmed in my mind is that even though there are three appointed and two elected, that the two elected have a great deal of influence in the executive committee. In fact, I'll tell you, as a matter of interest, and I don't think Mrs. Watson would contradict me, I find that Mrs. Watson and I do most of the arguing, and the other two appointed members take a particular point of view, and the commissioner sits almost as a chairman, and he tries to determine between the four of us what our thinking is, and he comes up with the decision.
I think public pressure on the appointed sector of the executive committee has forced the appointed members to slow down in their...
No. It's unfair. Irrespective of the people who hold those offices, it's totally unfair for the for the public to put pressure on those two appointed because they've got no choice. It's their livelihood, it's their job. They can't go back to the people and say, do you believe in this or do you believe in that, or can they can't be... the decisions they make are virtually forced on them in some respects because they're appointed people.
We talked about health and a little bit about welfare. The Wolf Creek situation is something that you delved into at one time, and what's happening?
The plans are on the drawing board for a new building, and it's going to start next year.
A new building for Wolf Creek would start next year. Yep. Expanded in size and facilities, service, and everything.
Everything. You see, I don't know whether it's generally known, Sandy, but that building was originally built as a sort of outcrop of the institution for adults, as an intermediary stage or as a secondary stage to people who are confined with less confinement, if you like, but for adults. And it's been adapted to the juvenile home. It's never been suitable, really. And it's the obvious need for changing it is very real.
What are your feelings about the lack of representation, other than by the minister, at the conference, which is coming up later this month on energy?
Next week.
Next week, right. Next Thursday.
Could you wait for a news release on that one?
Could I wait for a news release? I would like to, but I would like this.
I can't give you a scoop. I think the Yukon and the Territories will be represented.
When will we be receiving any
Before
information?
Before the conference.
Before the conference.
The conference is on Tuesday and Wednesday next week.
Right. Oh, it's Tuesday and Wednesday next week. Anything that I've left out, what do you look forward to in 74, besides
Me?
The election?
A territorial election.
You're looking forward to it. You weren't at one time.
Not for me particularly, not for myself, but I'm looking forward. I think the public are fed up with politicians. I think they've had a belly full of politicians. I think they've had a belly full of quarreling and personalities and petty fights. I think they've had a belly full of government in total. I think that was beautifully illustrated in the last city election where 20% of the people turned up. I think we need new people in there, new fresh faces, and I think we need them to go in there with a policy and say, this is what we want to do, and the people can make their choice. They can go A, B, or C, D, how many of the choices they have. But I think it's absolutely vital that they realize that the people they're electing make the laws for them. You know, the laws that they live under. And they should look very carefully at the candidates, and they should definitely ask each one of them, who's your leader? Who are you going to put in the executive committee?
Mm-hmm.
What do you believe in? What do you believe in something in conjunction with all these other people?
That's a real change from what's happened in the past.
Yes, and it's got to come. We've got to grow up to it. We've got to accept the responsibility.
Okay. Clive Tanner, executive committee member, thank you very much for coming on the program. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sandy.
Where did you start that beard, by the way?
Oh, I cheated.
I thought you did. I kind of...
You're not doing as well as I am.
No.
I started 3 months ago, and quite honestly, because my...
Well, I wouldn't tell anybody 3 months ago, though.
Well, I know. You see, this is what I get after 3 months. My electric razor broke, and then while I was getting it repaired, I didn't shave, and so I thought, well, I might as well keep going. I've been here going on... This is my going into my sixth year, and I've never managed to produce a beard for you for rendezvous, so I thought I should
something around. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Very nice. Clive Tanner, executive committee member, our guest, and as well earlier, Hilda Watson. We hope to have Mrs. Watson back on the program sometime, possibly next week or the week after, with Eric Nielsen. I'll have to get in touch with him to talk about Kewaunee, and we certainly invite your thoughts and your feelings on Kewaunee National Park, and maybe we can get some things, some answers at that point from them. The answers that maybe you, the listener, are looking for. Thank you very much, and we look forward to an announcement on Yukon representation at the Energy Conference as well. We'll be back on Monday with Talk Back, and I will have some bagpipers on the program.
What?
Bagpipers? Some Scottish fellows. With the upcoming concert at F.H. Collins, and we might even get a tune or two out of them. So we'll be back on Monday at 11:05. Have a good weekend. Drive carefully, and maybe you can even get out and enjoy some of that Yukon weather.
Super Value cares. They want you to get more for your food dollar, and the best advice they can give you is to plan your meals ahead. And remember, fish, eggs, and cheese are all good substitutes for meat. Don't pay extra for fancy packaging, and be sure to check the newspapers for the best weekly buys.
Super Value, super buys at Super Value.
Super Value, where more than the value is super, but by gosh, the value is super.
Visit Hogan's Sports Lodge for the 640 and the 440 double-track Skidoo. It can be yours with no down payment on approved credit. Hogan's temperature reading right now, 13 below at the airport, 15 below downtown.
Dance tomorrow night from 9 until 3 in the morning at the White Horse Rec Center. Move to the sounds of the Nomad.
The Nomads, featuring Jay Compton, Blaze recording artist, Billy Wayne, formerly of the Copper King, Wayne Kinley and Les Westman. Food and refreshments will be available. Tickets are just $2 each, and you can get them at the door. So dance to the sound of the Nomads tomorrow night at the White Horse Rec Center.
Every one of the 65 Shoppers Drug Mart stores in BC, we help you save money. Now, in addition to our everyday low prices, we've lowered the prices on a great many popular items to bring you even better value for your money. Come into your Shoppers Drug Mart store and take a look at the prices. Take a close look. When you see a bright yellow sticker, that means that we've lowered the price on that item. You can see the value for yourself. You'll find our yellow price tags on a multitude of items throughout the store. Now you can save even more money on a great many of the drugstore health and beauty items you and your family use every day. So look for the bright yellow price tags for even greater values. Shoppers Drug Mart stores. There's one near enough to save you money.
Shoppers Drug Mart in Whitehorse is located on Main Street.
At 12:03, here's Keith Hampshire.
In the meat department, Jubilee sliced side bacon is 99 cents for a one-pound package, and regular cut pork spare ribs are 79 cents a pound. Listen to this. Grade A round steaks are $1.69 a pound, and your choice of maple leaf beef sausages, pork sausages, or beef and pork sausages, 2 one-pound packages for $1.99. All that and more this weekend at the food fair.
Want to brighten up your home or business? See the guys at KR Electric. They have all sorts of lighting fixtures and electrical supplies. And if they don't have exactly what you want, they'll order it. They're your electrical contractors, and that makes them specialists in a brighter way of life. They're also agents for Neon Products Limited. So drop in to KR Electric at 3169 3rd Avenue or call them now at 667-2839. Charlie Farquharson is brought to you each day at this time by Dixie Lee Fried Chicken.
1964 ended in a chorus of screams and hysteria for the Beatles. Yes, they would still scream. The age of cool was not here yet. Add up 1964, the overnight success year for the Four. All their albums were in the top 50 national sellers. All their singles hit number one on all the charts. They toured twice more after their first appearance on Ed Sullivan. They did Europe, where 100,000 were in the streets to see them, including many who plunged into the canals and swam to meet them. They did Hong Kong, New Zealand, and Australia, with 300,000 turning out to welcome them in Adelaide. In August, they hit the road for 32 days, traveled over 22,000 miles, covering 24 cities in Canada and the United States. 30 sold-out performances. One Kansas City millionaire offered $100,000 for an appearance in his town, excluded in the Beatles' August tour. He then upped it to $150,000 for a 35-minute appearance. He couldn't have made money, but the Beatles did go to Kansas City.